Tonight's show is dedicated to Nishmas Menucha Bas Moshe Yecheskel. We're learning this evening. We'll be studying Parashas Mishpatim. Parashas Mishpatim is a very fascinating parasha for many people. It's a review class for those who had the privilege of studying Meseder Noshim and Ezekiel, the Baba Kamas, the Baba Metzias. This is a review for you. The first half of Parashas Mishpatim is a very nice review into many of the Mesechtas and the Sugyas that we've learned in our yeshiva days and perhaps in other places as well. But the rest of the Parasha, which I want to focus about this evening, has many, many lessons and messages for our daily lives. In the past, and you can listen online if you missed it, in the past years, we spoke about the first half of the Parasha. This year, I want to try to get to the middle half of the Parasha and the lessons and the messages that Parashas Mishpatim gives us. We all know we're coming off of Parashas Yisrael. The end of Parashas Yisrael, we came off on a spiritual high. We got the Torah, Kabbalah HaTorah, Maimon Har Sinai. It was amazing. It was unbelievable. We were at the highest spiritual point we can ever obtain. We had unity. Ki ish echad b'lev echad. We had one with God. It was perfect, fantastic, amazing. Where do you go from there? What do you do with such a high level, lofty experience of spirituality? You open up this week's parasha and you learn about a slave. You learn about a slave and you learn about my ox gores, your ox. You learn about a guy who creates a pit and doesn't cover it. Seems like to be much of a letdown. We were flying high, spirituality, this, that, and the other, and we open up this week's parasha. So, if Reuven steals, and he doesn't have enough money, what do we do with him? And then we get better. What happens to that guy who does this wrong and that wrong? It seems to be a little bit of a depressing or somewhat of a letdown from what the high we came off of. And the answer is the Torah is teaching us something very, very important. That it's very nice to be inspired, and it's very nice to see inspiration, but the biggest inspiration is to live every day like a Jew. You could be inspired, you could be moved. The question is, and then what happens? What happens when the kumzitz is over? What happens after the spirituality passes? Do you go back to being the old Jew, or you go back to being a new, inspired, better Jew? And the lesson of Parashas Mishpatim is, how do we walk away from Har Sinai? The answer is with all these laws and decrees and new sets of Torah values. We now are changed as a people. We now have a whole new set of rules, regulations, and restrictions, and that's how we continue living on that high. The spiritual high is by putting it into rules and into practice. That's how we act, come off of something like Har Sinai. And Parashas Mishpatim, if it had to be summed up in a couple of words, it's the Torah is teaching us what does it mean to be part of a society. When you live with other people, you will come into conflict with other people. When you live in a bubble, when you live by yourself, so there's no question of when you're Shar Gor someone else. There's no someone else. You live by yourself in the forest. There's no question of whose land is this. There's no question of stealing because there's no one to steal from. When you are in a society and you live with people and you interact with people, then questions come up. So the Torah is giving us a rule and a large set of rules. How do you live in a society? Society is made up of Jews and it's made up of non-Jews. Many of these rules in this week's parasha have to do with non-Jews, because we're going to come across non-Jews in our society as well. So the Torah is giving us a guide of how to live in a society. What should a society life look like? And the answer is there's rules and regulations. It's not a free-for-all. You can't just open up pits in the middle of the street and hope no one falls into them. You can't just let your animal not be watched. You can't just start a fire in your backyard and walk away from it. There's sets and sets of rules and regulations of how to live in a society. But there's one other nekuda, which I think is extremely important, and even more so the world we live in today. The lesson of Parashas Mishpatim, summed up by Reb David Kviat in the Sefer Tzukas David, is one word: responsibility. The entire Parashas Mishpatim, with all these rules, are you have a sense of responsibility. I can't just let my ox do what it wants. I can't just create a fire in my backyard and go inside and say, well, whatever happens, happens. I can't do whatever I want, and I'm held responsible for my actions. We live in a world today where no one wants to be held responsible. We pass the buck on to someone else, to anyone else. It's always someone else's fault. It's never our fault. It's never our mistake. It's always someone else. Blame society, blame the rabbi, blame the teacher, blame the school, blame the parent. Kick it down the road until it's never my problem. Parashas Mishpatim teaches us it is your problem. And if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you are held accountable. It's a very powerful experience, in my opinion. This is what we learn. This is what it means to be a Jew. Being a Jew is a sense of responsibility. You got to get up in the morning. You got to daven. You got to learn. You got to be honest in business. These are responsibilities, and there's no two ways around it. You got to do it. Parashas Mishpatim is actually very beautiful, coming off of Kabbalah Satayra. Coming off Kabbalah Satayra, what does it mean to be a Jew? Responsibility. And that's what it really means to be an adult. Today, it's again, it's the lost on this world we live in today, is because many people don't want to be adults. They want to be 28, still be on their parents' insurance, live in their parents' basement, and be on their parents' credit card. That was the whole court case they had a few months ago about this guy who was suing his parents for finally kicking him out of the house. He was like 30-something years old, and he was suing his parents, "Achutzpah, you're kicking me out and making me be on my own." That's not the way it used to be. It used to be adult means you're self-sufficient and you're responsible. That's always the difference between an adult and a child. The Torah is teaching us, you know what it means to be a healthy adult? It means to be responsible. It's an achrayus. You have a car, you have an animal, you have to be responsible for it. You have a job, you're responsible for it. You have objects, you're responsible for it. So Parashas Mishpatim, I believe, can be summed up with this idea. It's empowering, but of course, it's obviously a big achrayus to be held accountable and to be held responsible for our do's and our don'ts in our life. Rashi tells us that all of these rules that we're about to study this evening were all given at Sinai. Not only was the Ten Commandments given at Sinai, but all these laws were given at Sinai also. I know the Mefarshim are bothered with the question, why would I think otherwise? Why would I think this was not at Sinai and only the Ten Commandments were at Sinai? So the Mefarshim all basically say the similar idea, is that we all know that the Ten Commandments came from God, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's words to us. And we say to ourselves, I have to keep this because it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's Hashem's will and want in this world. But as we go through this week's parasha, you say to yourself, some of this stuff, it's just common sense. It's logical. It's basically rules that you'd find in any normal country would have these types of rules. And that can lead itself for us to think that Choshe Mishpat is up to our discretion. It's as we see fit. It's sichli. It's logical. The answer is it's not logical. It's because Hashem said so. It might be logical. No one's debating it. But the underlining rule or reason of why we keep these mitzvahs is because Hashem gave them to us at Sinai as part of His laws and how to live a Jewish life. It may make sense. It may not make sense. But don't make any mistake to think that these are just normal, regular, cultural rules for anyone. These were specific rules given to us at Sinai. The Kotzke Rebbe points out, Kotzke Rebbe says beautifully, he explains, how do you ever know if someone's a real Ben Torah? It's not by how much Torah he knows. If you ever study history of the Gedolim, I've been on this self-educating process of learning more about Gedolim. And there's one common denominator in every Gadol you'll read about and every Gadol you'll study. It's their midos and their character traits, and it's not about their learning. Every Gadol was a big Masmid, was a big Tamachal. That's all true. But the greatness of Gedolim, of all the Gedolim throughout our history, was their Ben Adam Lechaveroi, was their character traits, how they were as a person. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the great Reb Chaim Brisker, who in the yeshiva world, everyone studies their Torah, they break their head on his words for weeks and weeks. Do you know what it says on his Matseva? It doesn't say the great Rav Brisk, it doesn't say the Lamdin, it doesn't say the one who gave us two dinim, it doesn't say the one who gave us Gavron Chavtsa, these are all the things he gave us. It says, Reb Chaim, the Rav Shal Chesed. That was where he lived. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's entire life was chesed. He didn't care about the rest of these things. The Beis Halevi, his father was like that also. All the great leaders. You pick a great leader, their greatest accomplishment, in my opinion, was not so much their Torah. It was they lived a life of chesed because the Torah changed who they are. Says the Kotzke Rebbe, how do you know? How do you know if someone is changed by the Torah? How do you know if Har Sinai meant anything to you? That's this week's parasha. Last week's parasha, you became a Ben Torah. Now, how are you going to live like a Ben Torah? The Eilah HaMishpatim is how you're going to interact, how you're going to live, how you're going to get along with people, how you're going to have interpersonal relationships. That's going to define what type of Kabbalah Satorah you had. The mere fact that you were at Sinai and the Torah went through, that's not going to be good enough. I said this story over last year, it's worth repeating again. They say over the story, Rabbi Soloveitchik said this about his grandfather, Reb Chaim. Rabbi Fran records this in his books, and if I didn't see it in print, I would never have the audacity to say it over. He says the following story. Reb Chaim was once walking in the town of Brisk. Chaim was a Rav of Brisk. And the kids were playing a game. And they were playing a game with cowboys and Indians, an equivalent, and they needed a horse for the game. And none of the kids wanted to be the horse. So one of the kids said, Rabbi, would you be the horse? Chaim said, of course. Kids need a game, they want to play, I'm here to help. So they said, but we got to tie up the horse. So Chaim said, okay. So they took up Chaim, they put a rope around his neck. They said, but we got to tie you to the tree. Part of the game. So Reb Chaim said, okay. So they took Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the great Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, they tied him to a tree while the kids played. Then the kids decided it's time to go home for lunch, and they left Reb Chaim on the tree. Reb Chaim sitting there, can you imagine, just picture this? The great Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the Lamdan Hadar, tied to a rope to a tree, waiting for the kids to come back. And the Shamash comes, and he says, Rabbi, what's going on over here? He said, what do you mean? They needed me for a game. So I agreed, but the kids went home for lunch, and they never came back. So the Shamash says, so let us untie you now. Chaim said, Chas v'Shalom. That's whole part of the game. The kids are going to come back and I'm already untied. They're going to miss out on half the game. I'm going to stay here tied up. That was Reb Chaim's salvation. That's what it means, this Rabbi, salvation recorded about his grandfather. That's what it means to be caring about other people. Now, I'm not asking, nor am I suggesting that Rosh Hashivas and Rabbanim should do this, but it's just a fascinating insight to what does it mean to be an Ish Chesed. But that's, says the Kotzke Rebbe, that's this idea. The idea of this week's parasha is to see that the Torah doesn't just come through you and make you more academic and make you smarter and sharper, but it changes who you are. And that's really, if you read any, pick a biography on a gadol or study any gadol, every gadol, the Torah changes who they are. And if not, then they're not really a gadol. All the great leaders that we've had throughout the history, the Torah changed who they are. And therefore, Zakta Katz Karebo, that's Yisrael Timishpatim. If the Kabbalah's Torah is going to change us, it's going to be impacted by how we interact with other people. And the first thing we find, again, this is really not what we're getting into tonight. This is just an intro. I really want to get to a whole different part of the parsha, but I just wanted to mention some brief points in the beginning. We have the Eved Ivri. The Eved Ivri is a Jew. A Jew like the rest of us who was sold as a slave for 6 years, and the seventh year he goes free. So the Medrash writes in this week's parasha a beautiful idea. He says that the Eved Ivri is not referring to the simple version that we all understand it as a Jew, but it's referring to Am Yisrael. Kisikna Eved Ivri, says the Torah, that's referring to us as a Jewish people, and we're going to go through six Golios. We're going to go six different countries, nations that are going to put us through Golos, and the Medrash counts them. He goes to all the different six that we have, Mitzrayim, Bavel, Madai, Paras, Ashur, Rome, all the six. Ubashvius Yesin, in the seventh year we go free, we go into the arrival of Mashiach. So explains the Medrash, obviously a different understanding of simple pshat in this pasuk. Then the pasuk tells us that this guy comes, in Bigapoy Yavoy, Bigapoy Yetzei. If he comes in alone, he goes out alone. Says the Chidah, this pasuk again on a deeper level, this pasuk is referring to all of us in our lifetime. Ki sikne eved ivri means when Hashem will acquire us, Hashem will put us into this world. What will we do? Depends. We can work for 6 years, and then the seventh year we'll go free. Or, in Begapo Yavo, if we come into this world empty, with no mitzvahs, Begapo Yetze, we'll leave this world with no mitzvahs. It's all up to us. It's what we do in this world. If we fill this world up, be productive, then we'll leave as productive people. If not, says the Chidah, we will leave empty people. Then the Torah tells us an unbelievable idea that if you are a Jewish slave, you're actually allowed to marry a non-Jewish woman. You're permitted in a Shivcha Kanaan. Says the Chafetz Chaim, can you imagine this? One of the worst things a Jew can do is live with a non-Jew. Yet we allow this Jew to live with a non-Jew as a Shivcha Kananis. Why? All because he stole. Look what stealing can do. It could take a nice, good Jewish boy and bring him to a point where he's now going to be living with a non-Jewish woman, which is very much against Torah ideology, because you don't realize when you take what's not yours, the evil impact it can have down the road. Then the Torah continues to discuss something. The Torah then discusses the idea of hitting one's It says, "V'chimake ishu meis moshi mos." If you hit a person and he dies, you get the death penalty. And then the Torah says, "V'chiyazid isharei lahargar barmoi." If a person plans to kill, may imiz b'chi from the mizbeach tikachen olamas, he should be taken to be killed. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, this pasuk is teaching us that even if the kohen screams, "You can't kill me! I am the kohen. I am essential. I am a high-ranking member of society." Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, "Do not have mercy on those people that don't deserve mercy." Writes Rabbeinu Bechaya, this pasuk teaches us, don't have rachmanis on achzarim. Don't say, well, how can I kill him? He's a kohen. He's so important. He's so special. He's so this, he's so that. Says the Torah, take him. If he's guilty, he's guilty. This was a problem. We as a nation suffered from this for a while, that we always were very hesitant to punish or to deal with those people in our community that make mistakes because, oh, he's a rabbi, he's a high this, he's a high that. Again, assuming that they're guilty. There's a lot of non-guilty people that got into trouble for no reason. It's not their fault, and they shouldn't be held accountable. But Zakar ben Bechai, if you're guilty, I don't need any excuses. You're this, you're that. No. Me'im mizbechi, we take you from the mizbech. Why is it ben Bechai? Because if you have rachmanis on an achzarius, if you have rachmanis on the wrong people, it's horrible. Don't feel bad for the wrong people. Don't have mercy even. The guy deserved it. He deserved it. They say over from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky that in 1970, there were a group of Jews that smuggled diamonds in their tefillin out of Antwerp. And they were caught. They did it on purpose. It wasn't a mistake. Like, in Eretz Yisrael now, these kids, they don't know. They knew what they were doing. And they were arrested. And people started to gather pigeon shvuim. We should go redeem them. Rabbi Yaakov said, absolutely not. Why should we go redeem them? They did a crime. They absolutely were wrong. They had no business doing this. They consciously decided to take their tefillin and use it as a way to hide diamonds. And on top of that, said Rabbi Yaakov, let them sit in jail because they did a horrific avla for Klal Yisrael. Now, every single Jewish traveler with tefillin is going to have to go through security and have his tefillin opened. They ruined society. So Rabbi Yaakov, we shouldn't feel bad for them. He did a crime. Now, if they didn't do it and they didn't realize, that's a different conversation. Zok the Torah, you did the crime, that's it. We have to be held accountable. Even if you're a kohen, if you're a high-ranking member of society. Then the Torah continues, and it tells us, one who hits their parents, get the death penalty. Believe that this Tuesday night, we're having a halacha share that is very relevant for many people. If you're zeicha and you're lucky enough that your children become doctors, or somewhere in the medical field, so you figured I spent enough money on their education, so now I can finally reap the benefits, so I'm going to have them do medical procedures on me. So that's a big halachic discussion, if it's permissible for a child to do medical procedures on his parents, and it's all based on this pasuk. It says in this pasuk, if you hit your parents, you get killed. So the Gemara discusses, if a child accidentally spills too much blood when doing a procedure, he could be in a violation of this pasuk. And therefore, it's very questionable whether or not you're allowed to allow your children to do medical procedures for you. That will be Mitzvah Shem this Tuesday night here in the Young Israel. We'll discuss that child. But what the Gemara, the pasuk does say, if a person hits his parents, he gets the death penalty. Now again, this hitting means when blood comes out, or at least a black and blue mark. I always threaten my children when they get into their wild hissy fits when they start going like this, and I always warn them, be careful, don't hit me. You might be in a violation of this pasuk of Makkah of Avi'imai Ma'isimas. It usually does not calm them down, but that's what it says over here in the pasuk. Again, in order to be in this violation, it has to be a black and blue mark, or blood has to come out. Then the pasuk takes a break, and it says, V'gayne Vishu Macharoi, if you take a person and you steal him, V'nim Tzabiyada, and we found that you kidnapped him, Ma'isimas, also the death penalty. Then the Torah returns to parents and children. U'mikalel Avi'imai, and if you curse your parents, Ma'isimas, you also get the death penalty. Ask Reb Schwab. This middle pasuk seems not to fit. We're talking about parents and children. So let's keep. Let's talk about hitting your parents. Then we'll talk about cursing your parents. And then we'll talk about the guy who kidnaps. Says Reb Schwab, is such a powerful idea. Says Reb Schwab, can you ask yourself, why would any child hit their parent? Why would any child curse their parent? Says Reb Schwab, because the child feels that like he's being kidnapped. He's being so torn by his parents. They're making his life so miserable. They're making him so nuts. He feels like he's being kidnapped. Again, we're not justifying. We're not justifying. But we're saying, says Reb Schwab, why does a kid turn to this style of behavior? Because he feels like he's being choked by his parents. They kidnapped him. They're making his life miserable. You can't do this, you can't go here, and you can't blah, blah, blah. Whatever the various restrictions parents give today, the kid feels like he's being kidnapped. He feels like he's being choked. Says Reb Schwab, when you create such an environment, that could often lead to a child to go out and be mekalel or to be makah of a ve'imai. Therefore, says Reb Schwab, that's why the Torah puts it in between. It's an explanation of how you can one day have a mekalel and a makah of a ve'imai. If you treat your child like he's a prisoner, you treat him like he was kidnapped, that can lead to it. But the Medrash is bothered with the differences between makah of a ve'imai vis-a-vis the punishment. The punishment for hitting your parent is chenek, strangulation. The punishment for cursing your parents is skila. The Gemara assumes skila is a harsher punishment than chenek. Asks the Medrash, why do you get a harsher punishment for cursing your parents than you do for hitting your parents? So the Medrash answers what I've been saying for a very long time now, and specifically in the Shalom Bayis world, is when you were 4 years old on the playground, they told you, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never harm me. It's absolutely not true. Ask any adult. We as adults know that's so not true. We know words are extremely painful, specifically and especially when they come from someone you care about. So says the Medrash, and the Vilna Gaon brings this out as well. When you hit your parent, it will heal. They'll get the cast, they'll get the stitches, it will heal. But when you curse your parents, or you say something mean like that, that stings much longer. Therefore, says the Torah, the punishment is more severe because the crime is more severe. Although to the naked eye, you would have assumed the words are words and actions are actions. No, says the Medrash. The words sting more than the actions. And it lasts longer. The bruises don't heal so quick when it's words. So therefore, says the Torah, the punishment is much more severe. An important lesson. I often use this in Shalom Bayis. People say, words are words. No. Words sometimes are more painful. They last longer. They linger longer. They don't heal as fast as other things. And then the Torah tells us another interesting idea of V'rapoy yirapay. This is the source in Chazal, in the Torah, that a person should go to a doctor. The Kadosh Baruch Hu created an unbelievable creation in the world called medicine and science. And it's our job and our responsibility to go seek out and find medical treatment wherever it may be. We should look at it as a chance to improve our lives with all the many medical advancements that we have in the world today. Just for example, they just had a big Shasathon 8 times. Those of you familiar with the organization, it's an unbelievable organization that helps those with infertility issues. And the amount of medicine and science that they have working is unbelievable. And it's sad, even with all the science, Nebuch, there still are people that cannot conceive children. But what they have done with science and with some money and with some unbelievable people, they were able to mamish, create a place for those who normally without medical involvement would not be able to conceive. And Baruch Hashem today, they are able to have children. It's amazing what we do with medicine. We have to embrace it. There is still a small fragment of society. I'm not going to say which group, but there's a small group that does not buy into this. They will not use science and medicine to have babies. They feel that if Hashem wants you to have a baby, He'll give it to you naturally. The overwhelming majority is not like that. We believe if a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the science, use it. We should use it. And if, the more science we have, the more we should use. But that's this week's parasha of Yerapa. Yerapa, we should embrace and use all the medical and science that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us. And it keeps on, there's more every single day. The more we have, the more we should use. And therefore we can be healthier and better Jews. Then the pasuk tells us that two Jews are going to be fighting, and one Jew hits the other Jew. Two Jews are fighting, and they hit a pregnant lady. So Rabbi Yosef Nechemya Kornitzer has a very nice play on this pasuk. He says, you read the pasuk like this, two Jews are fighting. You know what ends up happening when two Jews fight? The nagfu isha hara. They end up pushing a pregnant woman. The pregnant woman here, in his analogy, in his mashal, is the Torah. The Torah usually gets affected. Usually when a fight breaks out between two Jews, the Torah is going to be the one who loses. And he says, V'yatsu yiladeh, you know who the yiladeh are? Those are children. Children die when we fight and we breach the Torah. The karbonos is the yiladeh, the young children. The young children, the tragedies that we have in our communities of young people dying is because yinatsu anashim, two people fight, the nagfu hara, and the push, who gets pushed? When me and you fight, who loses? The hara is the Torah. The Torah is the one that takes the beating, and the result is v'yatsi ladeh, the young children in our communities are the one who experience the loss. That's how his spin on this on that pasuk is. Then we'll just fast forward to one more pasuk, where the Torah discusses after going through all of Nezikin, after going through Shor and Bar and all of that discussed in Baba Kamba and Baba Metzia, the Torah has a very important passage. The Torah tells us that Kol Almano V'Yosum Lo Sa'anun. We have a specific law in the Torah to cause pain and anguish to a Almana, to a woman who lost a husband, V'Yosum, to someone who is orphaned. Lo Sa'anun, we are not permitted to cause pain. Rashi tells us, we all know, that this is not just only an Almana and a Yosum. This refers to anyone that is going through a difficult time. There are many people that are going through many difficult situations at different times in life, and we can't cause them unnecessary anguish. And the Torah gives us a very strong promise. And if you will, and if you will cause them pain, and they'll cry out to me, you will get it over the head. You will get it over the head. There's a famous story with the Chafetz Chaim, where there was a certain Yosam that another person in the community caused horrific pain to, and the Chafetz Chaim said, just wait and see. He's going to get his payback. And they said, when? They said, I don't know, but wait and see. 30 years later, the fellow who caused this anguish to the Yosam had a horrific way of dying, horrific, horrific, painful death. Chabad Chaim says in the Torah, it's going to happen. Question just as when. So therefore, we have to take this pasuk seriously. When the Torah tells us, be careful how you treat the downtrodden people, those that are going through difficult times, not only the Yosam v'Yisayma, not only the Almana, you have people that are having a hard time in other areas of life, sicknesses in the family, perhaps financial stress. All these people, we have to be careful how we treat them. We don't know what they're going through. I recently came upon a fascinating story that it's just to show you, as we start off at the beginning, what a real gadol is like in how he interacts with other people. There was a very wealthy gevir named Mr. Frank around the mid to late 1800s, and he had 4 daughters. He was extremely wealthy until the communists took away all his money, which happened to many Jews during those years. And he left in his will, he died. He left in his will, I want my daughters to only marry top-notch guys, all guys that are going to grow up one day to be big Rashi yeshivas. And his daughter did. His first daughter married a business Amma Meltzer. Rishon Zalman Meltzer went on to be a great Rosh Hashiva, also known as the father-in-law of Baron Cutler, that was a Rishon Zalman Meltzer. Then his daughter was dating another fellow, who was also a big Talmud Chacham named Rabbi Bext, big Talmud Chacham. And when they were on the date, she said to her, the girl, she said, I know your father owns a lot of factories. Do you think maybe one day you could take me to see one of the factories? And the mother-in-law got wind of this. She said, shidduch over. If he's such a serious boy, why does he want to see the factories? Not so serious. Pasnish. She nixed the shidduch. She said, I don't want. And she ended up marrying another wonderful boy. Fast forward to 30 years later, when the Slobodky Yeshiva was looking for a Rosh Yeshiva, so they came to her business Amma Meltzer. They said, do you want to be a Rosh Yeshiva? He said, I can't be a Rosh Yeshiva alone. I need a partner. So the altar said, I have a great partner for you, this Rabbi Bext. I want you to be partnered with this Rabbi Bext. So Mrs. Alma Meltzer said, although I would love to be partners with him, I can't be partners with him. Why? He said, because if I'm partners with him, this Almana, who nicks the shidduch, is going to say to herself, well, what an idiot. I could have had two son-in-laws that are Rosh Hashiva and Slobodka, and I said no to the shidduch. So Mrs. Alma Meltzer turned down the job to be Rosh Hashiva and Slobodka, because it would cause agmas nefesh to this almana, who years ago nixed the shidduch for this fellow, this Rabbi Bext. That's a madrega. That's how far people used to go to not fulfill or not to violate the Torah of hurting another person, specifically an almana. Again, today we would probably not do that. Today we'd probably justify under a million circumstances. But that was the story with the Mrs. Alma Meltzer. And ultimately, the Rosh Yeshiva ended up being another one of his brother-in-laws, Moshe Mordechai Epstein. But that's what a gadol was. That's what a gadol looked like at life. It wasn't just about me personally, my covet, my growth, how it will affect another person. Then the Torah gives us in this week's parasha the mitzvah of loans. In Kesef Talves Amid, when we give loans to Jews, we are not permitted to loan with interest. We are not allowed to loan money with interest. We can own with interest to another Jew. We can only loan to a guy with interest. There's a famous vart from the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar says, the reason why we're not allowed to lend with ribbis is because the moment there's interest, there's almost a guaranteed return. Whenever there's a guaranteed return, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was just taken out of the equation. In every business dealing, there's always a little bit that we know, I need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help me on. Says the Kli Yakar, the moment there's ribbis, that's guaranteed, you're going to turn a profit on your return, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just got knocked out of the equation. Whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets knocked out of the equation, that's not an equation you want to be part of. Therefore, says the Kli Yakar, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want us lending with ribbis, because ribbis takes away our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Palm writes in one of his svarim that Parashas Mishpatim used to be the Shabbos where they used to acknowledge all those Jews who used to have interest-free loans. They still have them today. Gemachs. This was the Shabbos where they used to celebrate those Jews who gave interest-free loans. They used to make a kiddush in their honor. They used to give them the aliyahs on the Shabbos. He says, Rav Palm, this didn't make it through the Holocaust, this minhag, but this used to be the Shabbos where we used to celebrate and acknowledge all those Jews who don't make a profit. They just lend money without ever guaranteed a return, which is obviously a big nesayon, and therefore they were always celebrated in this week's parsha. And then the Torah tells us a very interesting prohibition. It says, V'nasi ba'amcha loy sa'ar. A nasi amongst you, you're not permitted to curse. So many mefarshim learn, it doesn't just mean a nasi. We don't have a nasi today. It means any activist, any communal leader, any rabbi, any rebbe, anyone who's trying to make a difference in the world, you are not allowed to curse them. Because it's so easy to blame the leaders. It's always so easy to speak ill of them. It's their fault. It's their mistakes. It's their shortcomings. They're corrupt. They're evil. They're terrible. And therefore, we have a specific prohibition in this parasha that we are not permitted to curse. Even though very often we have desires to curse the leaders and blame them and yell at them, we are not allowed to say the Torah, V'nasi ba'amcha loy sa'ar. There's a pasuk in Mishle, in Perek Chavtes, pasuk Dal, the pasuk tells us, Melech b'mishpat yamoid aretz, a king, through justice, builds the land, v'ish terumos v'harsena, but a man with terumos destroys it. What does it mean, a man with terumos? So the Mefarshim say, this refers to the man that has the ability to give and he does not. Many people can be activists in their community, their shul, in their area, and they say, why bother? I'm not interested. How many times someone's offered to, you know, take a post and be a board member of a school, board member of a shul, and the answer is, thank you, but no thank you, I don't need the headaches. Says the pasuk in Mishlei, yeah, but you're destroying it, because we need to have good people also. Although it's a big headache and no one wants extra responsibility, but we need people, we need activists, we need people that are willing to take achrayas and are willing to make a difference, that they're willing to change the world. And therefore, that's why they explain. If you ever notice, every Shabbos morning, we have a very long Mishabech for those people that do Askonis B'tzorchei Tzibur Be'emuna. My father very often speaks about this at family simchas. He likes to reflect on this comment from the Mishaberach. where we say every single day, Kol Misha Ayis Kimtzarech Etzim Amuna, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yishalem, the whole lengthy drush of all the brachas. The answer is, you know why? Because it's not easy. The tendency is not to be an activist. Tendency is to sit back and let someone else do it. I don't want to be an activist. So those who talk it take the bull by the horn and become activists. And they say, you know, I'm willing to deal with all the garbage and all the complaints and all the issues. Taka get wonderful brachas because it's not easy. The tendency is not to want to be an activist. The tendency is just to sit back and take what we call the easy road. The easy way of life is much easier. And therefore says the Torah, if someone decides to be a leader and he decides to step up to the plate, you can't curse him. Because we need more activists. We need more people to make a difference for Klal Yisrael. They say over a story that when Reb Moshe Scherer's father-in-law used to be the Rav of the White Shul. I didn't know this. Reb Moshe Scherer's father-in-law was the Rav of the White Shul here many, many years ago here in Far Rockaway. And when his father-in-law passed away, he was offered the position as the Rav of the White Shul. And his mother-in-law was so happy. To her, this was like, you know, a nechama that her husband died, but her son-in-law was going to take over the shul. She was so happy to hear it. Reb Moshe Scherer was more than happy to take over the position. But he told the board, he told his mother, before I take the job, I want to run it by Reb Aaron Cutler. My Rebbe, Reb Aaron Cutler. So he tells Reb Aaron Cutler about this fantastic job, and Reb Aaron Cutler says, wonderful job, I'm not letting you take the job. You can't take the job. Why? So he said to him, because we have bigger plans for Moshe Scherer than to be Rav of the White Shul. So he goes back to his mother-in-law, he tells his mother-in-law, and she was very, very upset. This is a little contradictory to the story before about being mean to Almanas. Okay, you have to know. So he wasn't, and she was livid. For 10 years, she was mad at him. 10 years. 10 years later, he gets a phone call one day from his mother. His mother-in-law says, come over to the house right away. And you know, when your mother-in-law calls you, you run over right away. He runs over to his mother-in-law's house, and she says, now I understand. What is he talking about? There's a picture of Moshe Scherer on the New York Times on the floor of, where was he, Senate? What was he doing? Lobbying for something. Front page of the New York Times. For funding for the yeshivas. So his mother said, now I understood why you never took the job in the White Shul. We had bigger plans for you than just to be the Rav of the White Shul. So sometimes in life we have big plans for us. We got to do it. We're always afraid. I can't be this and I can't be that. I don't want to rise up. I want to just do this. We need activists. Klal Yisrael gets nowhere if we don't have activists. But the Torah says on the other end, you got to be nice to the activists. You can't curse them. You can't have it both ways. You can't say we need activists and then you yell at them and you treat them like garbage and you throw insults at them and you badmouth them. It can't work. So if the Torah tells us, v'nasi ba'amcha loisar, you're not allowed to curse, not just the nasi, but any activist, anyone who's trying to help Klal Yisrael, trying to make this place a better place for Am Yisrael, you have a violation to curse. Okay, this is what we're really supposed to get to tonight. We're really supposed to learn Perek Chav Gimel. This was just an intro into this week's parasha. Perek Chav Gimel, the parasha starts off like this. Loisisa Shema Shav. Do not say Shema Shav. How do you read this pasuk? So Rashi learns this pasuk is referring to the violation of Lashon Hara. That you're not allowed to say Lashon Hara, nor are you allowed to accept Lashon Hara. This is a violation of Lashon Hara. Good old-fashioned slander Lashon Hara. The Gemara in Pesachim asks, what is the connection between this pasuk and the pasuk that precedes it? The pasuk that precedes it is what? That when you have meat that you're not allowed to eat, you throw it to the dogs. Says the Gemara in Pesachim, because anyone who speaks Lashon Hara deserves to be thrown to the dogs. So says the Gemara. Says the Maharal, what is the connection between Lashon Hara and the dogs? Says the Maharal, let's go back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. The pasuk told us that during Yetzias Mitzrayim, the dogs didn't bark. Says the Maharal, the dogs know when to keep their mouth shut. And you, Misaper Lashon Hara, you don't. You're worse than the dogs. You'd be thrown to the dogs. And learn from the dogs. They at least know sometimes they keep their mouth shut. You who speak Lashon Hara, you don't even know when to keep your mouth shut. And therefore, you are worse than the dogs. And therefore, we throw you to the dogs. So explains the Maral. Then the pasuk tells us, Loisie acharabim l'ra'ois, v'loisane al-riv l'ntois, achare rabim l'hatois. This is a very famous principle. He's supposed to go after the majority. Go after the majority. So there's a famous kasha that's asked in the Medrash, and it's been asked throughout Jewish history by many, many knowledgeable Gentiles. They always ask the following question. Why do we keep Torah mitzvahs? The majority of this world does not keep Torah mitzvahs. The majority of the world is not religious. They're not Jewish. So the Torah says, go after the majority. So why don't we follow the majority opinion and let's not be ethical Jews? Let's follow the majority of the world and just be like the rest of the world. It's actually recorded in the Medrash. And this question was presented to the Chassam Sofer. It was presented to Rabbi Chana Wasserman, presented to quite a few gedolim throughout Jewish history. And the answer that they give, they all answer in three standard answers. One answer is, you only go after the majority when you're not sure. If I'm not sure, and the majority says one way, I go after the majority. But I'm sure that Torah is right. I'm not in doubt. Says the Chassam Sofer, what's the word lintois? Lintois means you're leaning. I'm leaning this way, I'm leaning that way, then I go after the majority. Says the Chassam Sofer, I'm not leaning either way. I know which way is right. I know Torah mitzvahs is right. I'm not even leaning. Says Rabbi Chana Wasserman, he says, what would happen if you walked into a bar and you see 100 people that are drunk and they're rolling around and they're clearly drunk and they're in a different place? Would you say, well, everyone else also has to be drunk because you have to follow the majority? So that's ridiculous. If the majority is acting improperly and they're doing what feels right to them, but it's not necessarily the correct thing, I don't have to follow them. Says Rabbi Chana Wasserman in here also. If I'm going to follow the majority when the majority is making decisions that are not correct and they're just using their own selfish impulses and selfish motivation, I don't have to follow the majority. You follow the majority, and the majority is a question of what's ethically correct. I'm not going to use your definition of correctness because we know you're clearly doing what's most fun and self-indulging towards yourself, and therefore there is no reason to follow the majority. The pasuk continues. The pasuk says, "Vidal, the poor man." Says the pasuk, "Vidal lo yisehadar birivai." So Rashi learns that don't give the poor guy a break. You have a massive court case between a multimillionaire and a guy who's basically bankrupt, and they're fighting over money. So you say to yourself, what's the moral thing to do? The moral thing is, let the poor guy get a break. Come on, look what he's suffering. Says the Torah, we don't work like that. What's right is right. And if the rich guy is right, he wins. And if the poor guy is right, he wins. It doesn't matter what his financial situation is. We don't believe in Robin Hood. We don't take from the rich to give to the poor. We don't believe in socialists. Bernie Sanders, we don't believe in all that. Right? Even though he's Jewish, he put his foot in his mouth, counts fine today when he spoke about his opinion on Israel. Okay? If I can quote Ben Shapiro, another Jew, Bernie Sanders is as Jewish as that chair is Jewish, and that's the extent of his Jewish right, and he shouldn't talk as a Jew because he's not living as a Jew. But in any case, we don't believe in taking from the rich to give to the poor. That's not our ideology. But there's another way of reading the pasuk. Mefarshim say, Vidal does mean someone who's poor financially. Means someone who's poor in mitzvahs. Let's say you have two people come to a judge. One guy is a big Talmud Chacham, big rabbi, and the other guy is not from. And they're arguing who's telling the truth. So let's be honest. What's your initial thought? The guy who's living like a non-religious Jew is telling the truth? Or the rabbi with the long beard and the long coat is telling the truth? Initially, you're always going to side with the tzaddik. Zok the Torah, Vidal, Loisa Dabrivoi, don't throw him, don't give up on him. Don't give up on the guy. He might be right. He might be a bigger, a lower level Jew, but he still might be honest. Just because he's not a tzaddik doesn't mean he loses automatically. Doesn't mean he's not trustworthy. It's an important lesson in life. We're always leaning towards that we're familiar with, but not necessarily is that always the right answer. Then the Torah continues, Ki sifga shar oivcha, if you meet up with the shar of your enemy, or his donkey is lost, Hashev tishi venolai, this is the mitzvah of Shabbat Aveda. Then the Torah says another example, Ki you will see the donkey of someone you hate. He's buckling under the load. You're going to walk away from him. You're obligated to help. So the Mefarshim point out, what's the difference between a soin acha, someone you hate, and a oyivcha? Oyiv and soin are both enemies. The Mefarshim point out that the guy says one is an oyiv, is someone you hide your hatred. You meet him on the street, smiles, hello, everything's great. Deep down, you can't stand the guy. Soin acha is someone you're openly hate. You don't mince words, you don't fake it, you both don't like each other. Frek to Gemara and Pesachim, are we allowed to hate Jews? How could the Torah write this? The Torah writes, you walk down the street and you see your enemies, the guy you hate. We're allowed to hate people? So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about a person who deserves to be hated. He's not living a Jewish life, he's sinning, he's doing everything morally incorrect, you're allowed to hate him. So the Rishonim have a question. They say, it's not true. The Gemara says, if I'm walking down the street and I see my enemy's animal needs help, or I see my enemy's object needs to be returned, or another animal is buckling under the load, I have to go help my enemy. Why, says the Gemara? Because you have to practice overcoming your Yetzihara, overcoming your feelings towards your enemy. Frek the Rishonim, the Bali HaTosfos asked, if he's a Rasha, and that's why I hate him, why should I go help him? Let his stuff die. He's a Rasha. He deserves. So the Bali Tosfos say something which is so true. They say, you're right. Initially you hate him because he does Averis. But you know what ends up happening as human beings? You start to hate him beyond that. Initially you might disagree with him and you might not get along because he's not living a Torah life and you're upset at him for that. But the longer the relationship continues, it starts to be much more than just that. It starts to be that you hate him just because you hate him. And therefore the Torah says, you know, such a relationship you have to work on. You have to control that feeling, and therefore you have to help him. The Biskurov was once, a bunch of yeshiva bachim came to the Biskurov after one of the many protests in Eretz Yisrael, after one of the many hafkanas that take place in Eretz Yisrael. And they were so excited, they thought they just did the greatest thing in the world. And the Biskurov said, I'm not impressed with you. He said, why? He showed him the doubt, the Rishayim this week's parasha. He says, maybe initially when you went to the protest, for the first 10 minutes you were protesting L'Shem Shemayim. He said, but after that, it was already just personal hatred. It starts off L'Shem Shemayim. I hate you because you're not following Torah mitzvahs. And then 10 minutes later, I hate you because you don't look like me, and I hate you because you don't dress like me. And all of a sudden, by the time we're done, the hatred is not anymore L'Shma. The hatred stems from a very different place. Therefore, says the Biskurov, I'm not overly impressed with your Hafkana. Another story from the Altar from Slobodka. I just listened to a history class in the Altar from Slobodka. So I'm going to share some Altar from Slobodka stories. The Altar of Slobodka was once notified that there was a certain priest who lived in near Slobodka that just died. And he was mean. He was a horrible person. He was against Jews. He was a horrible, horrible person. And they came to the altar running. Oh, he died, he died. He thought he'd be so happy. And the altar wasn't overly excited. They said, Rebbe, aren't you excited that he died? He said, no. He said, Lamaisi, he's a person, he's a human being. He said, because if I start to hate non-Jews, next step is I'm going to start to hate Jews. It's a very profound thing. We start to say, well, oh, it's okay, I'm allowed to hate Goyim. Yeah. Today you'll hate Goyim, tomorrow you'll hate Jews, and then that's where it starts. So the Alter trained himself that he's not going to allow himself to hate anyone, because then it's going to lead you down the path that the Biskurov pointed out, that's no longer Lishma. The Targum Onkelos writes that when you help your enemy, it's not enough to help him. Says the Targum Onkelos, you know what you have to do? Tishboik, mishpak, tishboik, madde, belibok, aloi. You got to throw out whatever is in your heart before you help him. It's not enough to walk over to the guy and change his tire, screaming under, you know, saying under your breath, "I hate you, you're a jerk," but I'm going to change your tire anyway. Says the Targum Unkelis, you got to throw away all that hatred before you can start to help him. Why? So the Mefarshim say, because if you want to do a 100% good job, you got to get rid of the hatred. You have to help him because the Torah says so, but you're not going to do 100%. You're not going to give it your best. You'll give it 95%. The only way you can really help this guy is if you put aside your differences. Because if you don't put aside your differences, you're not going to give him the best you. You'll give a 95% job. Because there's a part of me, I don't want to do my best work. Says the Mefarshim, if you want to do your best work, you got to throw away, get rid of the hatred, put it aside. This way you can ensure you're doing the best job possible. And then the Torah tells us, Azoiv Tazoiv Ima, you must help him. There is a very important kliyaka in this week's parasha, which again, I would want to give out to our socialist Democrats running for president. Says the kliyaka, Azoiv Tazoiv Ima, writes the kliyaka, you only have an obligation to help another Jew when he's willing to help himself. Writes the kliyaka, we live in a world, kliyaka lived in the 1700s, where there are Anim who say, you support me, I'm going to sit home and do nothing. Says the kliyaka, we have absolutely no responsibility to help those who don't help themselves. You want to help? You want to try? I'll help you, we'll do it together. But if I have a flat tire and I say, hey, your problem, buddy, I'm going to sit back and watch, I have no obligation. Says the kliyaka, we help those who want to help themselves. Azoiv tazoiv imai. We do it together. You show an interest, I'll help you. You're looking for a job, I'll give you a job. But you're going to sit on your couch, watch TV, and expect the government to give you money? We have absolutely no responsibility. I think Bernie Sanders needs to listen to this chumash. It's going to change his whole political outlook. Says the kliyaka, we have no responsibility to fund those who don't want to help themselves. You don't want to get a job and we should take care of you, says the kliyaka? Absolutely not. Azoiv tazoiv imay does not dictate such responsibility. Another story from the Altar from Slobodka. The Altar from Slobodka was a fascinating person. You have to understand how he taught his talmidim, how he trained them. Whole different world, maybe for a different time. But there was a certain married fellow that the Altar from Slobodka asked him. He said, I'm curious, did you help out your wife preparing for Shabbos this week? He said, of course. The Gemara says that you have a mitzvah to clean your house for Shabbos by yourself, and you're not allowed to let someone else do it. This past Friday, my cleaning lady canceled Friday morning. The worst thing that could ever happen is for a cleaning lady to cancel Friday morning. So my kids were home. So I told him, said to guys, this week we're going to have the mitzvah to clean the house ourselves. Normally we have the cleaning lady do, but this week we get to do it by ourselves. Mitzvah by Yosef B'Shluchah, it's a mitzvah to clean the house by yourself. And Kachava, they talk very good to help me clean the house. So the fellow told the Altar from Slobodka, you know why I helped out? Because it's a mitzvah to clean for Shabbos. Says the Altar, you missed the boat. Do you know why you're supposed to help out? Because of this pasuk. You see your wife is overworked on Friday afternoon. She's trying to clean the house. She's trying to get the kids cleaned up. She's trying to cook Shabbos. You know why you're supposed to clean? Not because Hashem said so. Because to help her out. Azoiv tazoiv imoy, said the Alter from Slabotka. He tried to teach his Talmidim, don't make it about Ben Adam Mamaka. Don't make it a from a cheshbon. Make it because this person needs help. Azoiv tazoiv imoy, help her out. You see your wife is overworked. Don't do it because Hashem says I'm supposed to clean the house. No, because your wife needs help. Azoiv tazoiv imoy, said the Alter. It's all about helping other people. It's not so much about your relationship with you and HaKadosh Baruch. And then we have perhaps one of the most famous psukim, Midvar Sheker Tirchuk. From Sheker, one should distance himself. Uncle Moshe made this very popular in one of his songs. Midvar Sheker Tirchuk, from anything that's Sheker, we should distance ourselves. This is the only place in the entire Torah where the Torah tells you to distance yourself from something. Everything else the Torah says, don't do it. And the Rabbanan put in all these fences and all these siyagim to prevent us. This is the only violation where the Torah says, I am putting up the fences. Midvar sheker tichat, stay far, far away from sheker. It is a horrible midah to be a part of your life. Stay very, very far away from it. Oh, man. Okay, we'll wrap up with this unbelievable idea. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and the Satmar Rebbe, both great, great, great people. And one day the Satmar Rebbe passed Rabbi Yaakov in Williamsburg, and they were talking about the war experiences. Both the Satmar Rebbe and Rabbi Yaakov both survived the Holocaust. They both lost family, but they both survived the Holocaust. And Rabbi Yaakov asked the Satmar Rebbe, he said, Rebbe, in what merit do you think you survived the Holocaust? What do you think the merit was? So the Satmar Rebbe was a little uncomfortable with the question, but he started to answer. He told Rabbi Yaakov, it's because I never slept in a bed. The Satmar Rebbe was known, he never went to bed. He slept in his chair, he dozed off, he never went to bed to sleep. So the Satmar Rebbe said, fine, but you, Rabbi Yaakov, why did you merit to survive the Holocaust? So Rabbi Yaakov said, as far as I can remember, I never, ever said anything that wasn't 100% true. Now for anyone to say that is amazing. To say I can, as far as I remember, I never said sheker in my entire life. I was pulled over by a cop a few years ago. And the cop said, you were on your phone. I said, I was not. He said, you were. I said, I was not. He said, the cop tells me you're lying. I said, officer, I'm a rabbi. I'm not allowed to lie. He did not believe me. He said, can I check your phone? I said, sure, check my phone. Check my phone, Taka. I wasn't on the phone. He didn't give me a ticket. So I said to myself, why didn't he believe me when I said I'm a rabbi? I'm not allowed to lie. The answer is because I don't believe it. Rabbi Yaakov got up and said he never told a lie. That was true. Can I say I never told a lie? I can't say that. That's why the cop didn't believe me. But Rabbi Yaakov to say he never told a lie his entire life. And that's why he survived the Holocaust is unbelievable. That's Midvar Sheker Tichuk. How far we have to distance ourselves from things that are questionable. The Manchester Rosh Yeshiva used to say over, he says, why is it that so many kids go off the derech? So he said, because we have what's called Timtum Alev. How do you have Timtum Alev? So Timtum Alev comes from eating things that are contaminated. So what do you mean we all eat such top-notch kosher food? He says, yeah, but the food that the parents bought is Oyum Badatz, Chalav Yisrael. But where did the money come from to buy the food? The money was tainted. The money was questionable. Then you buy the kosher food, the food becomes Timtum Alev. Then the kids eat it, the kids become affected. Therefore, he says that's how we can have a generation today of kids that are nebuch eating food, ingesting food that is questionable. The Chazanish used to have a minyan every single day in his house for Mincha Gedolah. He was very makbid of Mincha Gedolah. And they just got the minyan 10 exactly. And his cousin, Reb Greineman, said, I can't really stay because I have a meeting at 1 o'clock and I promise someone I'm going to be at 1 o'clock. And if I stay for Mincha, I'm going to be late. The Chazanish said, no minyan today. You go to your meeting. You gave him your word. Your word is your word. Midvar Sheker Tichuk. You told me you're going to be there, you got to be there. Therefore, says the Chazanish, I'd rather you not daven, and I'd rather we abolish the minyan, and you go and be there. The Satmar Rebbe was known for quoting the Rambam Hilchos Shavuos. The Rambam says in Hilchos Shavuos, Tzarech lahazir biktanim. We have to be careful to teach our young children, Lilmoid l'shoinam divrei emes, to teach them to talk honesty. I yell at my kids when they have this mishagas, where they'll tell me something, they say, no, I was just joking. I said, that's sheker. Don't lie. Tell me I made a mistake, I miscalculated. Don't tell me that's sheker. We need to teach ourselves and our children to stay far away from sheker because this is a midah that we want to have nothing to do with. This is a midah that is all bad, all evil, no good from it. And the Torah says, stay away from it. Midvar Sheker Tirchuk, distance yourself from anything associated with sheker.